Hello and happy Tuesday, my friends. This is Danielle Carter, and I'd like to welcome you back to another informative episode of Cisco Champion Radio, where we provide insights and visibility into products and solutions across the Cisco portfolio and trending topics across our industry. If you like our podcast, please follow us and feel free to share your favorite episodes with your colleagues and friends. If you have thoughts or comments on what we should cover in a future episode, let us know, talk with us on Twitter at Cisco Champion. Today, we have a fan favorite as our Cisco guest and a very interesting topic in store for you. We have our champions and experts here to lead the conversation, so let's get started with introductions first. Mike, let's start with you. Who are you and what do you do?
Yeah, hey, my name is Mike Belitho. I am based out of New Jersey. I'm a Wi-Fi engineer, and I work in a national healthcare system here in the United States.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us. David, you're up. Tell us who you are and what it is that you do.
Hello. Thank you for the opportunity of being here. My name is David Penalosa, and I'm a consulting engineer for Verizon Business.
Great. Chetel, tell us who you are and what it is that you do.
My name is Kjetil Teigen Hansen. Norway. I am a senior wireless engineer at Cisco Gold Partner Concha, Norway.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us. All right, on to our Cisco host and guest. Dan, can you tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is that you do at Cisco?
Yeah, my name is Dan Wang. I am a product manager on the Cisco wireless team, responsible for AP platform development.
All right. Fred, on to you. Thank you for being our guest on today's episode. I'm sure most of our listeners already know who you are, but can you tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is that you do for those that may not know?
Sure thing, Danielle. Thanks. My name is Fred Niehaus. I'm a technical marketing engineer based out of Richfield, Ohio. I'm one of the original Aeronet guys back when Cisco bought Aeronet in 2000 to get into Wi-Fi, and I was actually doing wireless with Aeronet back in, as far back as 1995. So I'm kind of a Wi-Fi fossil, you might say. Anyway, we're gonna talk a little bit about, I wanna talk a little bit about some of the newer products that we're releasing, the 9163E, and wanna touch on some of the other products in 6 GHz, maybe talk a little bit about 6 GHz deployments, outdoor deployments, things that you need to be concerned about if you're doing an AP outdoors, things like lightning and weatherproofing, things like that.
Well, yeah, Fred, let's dive right in. Let's talk about this 9163E, which is Cisco's first offering on an outdoor AP that is 6 GHz capable. So why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
What's really nice about this AP is it's got 3 radios that are 2x2 in. It was a radio dedicated for 2.4 gig, 2x2, 5 gig, and 6 gig. It also has an IoT radio in it and a tri-band scanning radio that can listen to all frequencies, for interference and for, spectrum intelligence, things like that. So that's the neat thing about it is, additionally, it also has a built-in GPS for AFC, the automatic frequency control. We'll touch on that a little bit. And one of the neat things about that product is that if you are deploying somewhere where 6 gig is not yet approved, the nice thing about it is you can turn it into a standard 2.4 and 5 gig AP. And, it's a smart AP. The antennas are self-identifying. We'll touch on that in a little bit. But it's just a nice AP that can be deployed quickly, get you outdoors. The FCC is got this thing, automatic frequency coordination, where the AP uses the GPS signal to know where it's at and then coordinates with other people in the area that might be licensed on 6 gig and picks the proper channel for you to use. That is in beta right now. We're expecting that to be turned on any time now. It's like anything else with the FCC regulations, and things move slowly before they actually get turned on, but we expect it to happen really at any time.
So if I understand well, then it means that you can install these AP anywhere, but you're planning to do so. And while the 6G frequency is still not approved, you can just prepare everything. So by the moment it gets approved, you just pull a switch and than Jardin 6G, right?
Oh, absolutely. And this product out the gate, it's really small. I mean, you know, we're talking about just a little over 9.5 inches, you know, in size, you know, all the way around, and maybe 2.5 inches thick. It's not very, very big. It's a lot smaller than a lot of the older APs that we've deployed in the past. And, you know, the mounting brackets, everything fit really well. The neat thing that I think about it is the fact that it can band steer clients. So when you do have 6 gig enabled and it's running, if a client is 6 gig capable and it jumps in at say 5 gig, it'll get moved over to 6 gig on its own, just kind of band steered over there, which is kind of neat as well.
That's really wonderful.
Let's talk about it.
Sure, absolutely. So what happened is there's two types of products that are in the market. There are the products that are designed for indoor use, and those are products that don't have external antennas on them. They're not weatherproofed. They're designed to be used in areas where there's walls and a ceiling, right? And those APs in the US can take advantage of the entire 6 gigahertz spectrum without having to coordinate or figure out what's in their area, because they're called low power indoor LPI products, right? Now the catch is, what do you do when you have a product that's indoors and you don't have a directional antenna, right? If you know, so you've got a built-in antenna that does a 360 degree pattern designed to go on a ceiling, cover an area kind of like a light bulb, a raw light bulb would be if it was on the ceiling, right? So the challenges are that if you use low power indoor, and the 9166 is a product like that. In fact, most of the 91 series, the 9162, 64, 66, they've all got integrated antennas that go in a 360 degree pattern. Now, what we did in the case of the 9166D1 is we integrated a directional antenna in it so it could solve all those problems indoors where people want to be able to focus the energy. You know, you're in a hospital, you're trying to go down a long hallway, maybe you're in a warehouse and you're trying to cover a long aisle, those kinds of things. So the 9166D1 worked out for that, but there's still a need to use 6 gig outdoors, you know, because those clients, if I've got 6 gig in the new iPhone or the new device, I'm sitting out in an outdoor area, you know, maybe like a garden area or, you know, an outdoor where there's benches and things, and I want to use the product, I'm going to want to use 6 gig. So we need a way to get in and service 6 gig outdoors as well as indoors. So the 9163E does use this thing called AFC, or automatic frequency control. And what that's saying is, as you pointed out, there are people in the near field that have dedicated links. Maybe you're a utility company and you've paid for a license on 6 gig to be able to do a microwave link directly from maybe your power plant to one of your telemetry stations or something that you're doing. You've got, or your TV crew, and you've got something that's shooting that microwave signal. So if you've got a dedicated 6 gig link from point A to point B, that link is registered with the FCC. So then what happens is, when the AP comes up, if it's an AP that supports standard power, not low power indoor, but standard power, which is a little higher power, two things happen. One is, you no longer can use the entire 6 gig band. You're using sections of it, you know, just two areas of the 6 gig band. And the GPS in the AP will tell the system, you know, your network system, where that AP is physically located. And then it queries a database, and that database says, what is in my area that this AP outdoors could possibly interfere with? And if it comes up with a link in that area, it will automatically reassign that channel to one that won't interfere with that device. So that's how we got to get 6 gig, because, you know, when we asked for more spectrum, I was quite pleased that the FCC and Canada and others said you can have this 6 gig spectrum, because we needed a place to grow. It's a big game changer, because it's the first time in, well, years that we've had a spectrum increase like this. And this will allow for things like bonded channels, more channels, no problems with things like you'd mentioned DFS, which is, this DFS in 5 gig, what happens is it listens for weather radar. And once it detects it, it says, oh, I hear something on this channel, I've got to go. And now it re-changes its channel. This won't happen in 6 gig. 6 gig, the channel gets coordinated, it gets assigned, and it stays there, and you don't have that kind of problem. So it's really exciting because having that AFC or that automatic frequency control allows 6 gig to be deployed. There's plenty of spectrum, even though it's a little more limited than low power that uses the whole spectrum. There's still plenty of spectrum, plenty of channels there to grab spectrum and to be online outdoors. And that's pretty exciting.
Thank you for that explanation, Fred. I have an additional question there, since you mentioned DFS. So if I design a big outdoor design with 106 gigahertz access points that coordinate with AFC, everything is fine, and then someone, entrepreneur, can installs a lot of point-to-point links on 6 gigahertz, and then they are registered with AFC, will then my access point update with AFC and rearrange all the channels? DFS, like event-driven AFS?
It's possible, but pretty unlikely. I don't think there's a lot of new 6 gig links, point-to-point links going up anymore. There's a lot of people who are incumbents. They've been there. They've had this link. They're not going to rip and replace it because, Cisco and a bunch of people decided to make Wi-Fi stuff work on 6 gig, right? So they coordinated with the FCC when we asked for that spectrum. They said, hey, wait a minute, you're gonna interfere with us. And that's why that whole AFC thing came about, was to allow those links that are already there to exist. It's kind of like old 2.4 links. If you've got some old 2.4 gig link and some really, really old application that runs a really, really old client, you're not likely to just wanna be told you have to replace it. You're like, I'm gonna run this thing into the ground, right? And that's kind of how I think 6 gig is. I mean, if you got a link up there, it's up there. I don't anticipate a lot of new 6 gig links just going up and causing problems, And if they do go up, like I said, there's plenty of spectrum because those point-to-point links are just what they are, point-to-point. You're actually, it's kind of like standing on top of the roof of a building with a flashlight or a searchlight pointing it at some other place, right? It's not likely there's going to be more than one of those links in your area, if any at all.
Yeah, and I believe it runs every day. And I think the FCC wanted it to run hourly.
No, it runs every 24 hours. Every 24 hours, it's going to query that. And it's done that way for a lot of reasons, because, somebody might try to do something to walk around it. People are like electricity and water. They take the path of least resistance. If I can figure out a way to get this thing to do what I want, I'm just going to do it, right? And that would be somebody that might set this thing up in their basement where there's nothing there, right? And then get that link and go, okay, now I'm linked in. I never have to check it again, right? So that's why it's 24 hours, because if you're going to do a site survey, if you're going to do something like an AP on a stick, and you're going to stick this AP up on a tripod in a building and start testing it and all that, well, you can get your link and you're good for 24 hours. And so you can disconnect the AP. It's going to still work for 24 hours, so you can get your site survey done, things like that. But at the end of that day, it's going to go, hey, I don't see my database. I can't call home. So in that case, I'm shutting that 6 gig radio back off again.
Yeah. So hopefully you don't have links that covers the entire band, hopefully. So we'll just disable a couple of channels if you're not very unlucky on where you site this.
So as you take into account, if you want to do some, for instance, some outdoor deployment, is it a checklist that you can provide for it, as in make sure that X and Y things are done prior to doing it, or make sure you avoid making this and this other silly mistake? The typical checklist so you don't screw yourself up then later.
Well, there's a couple things to think about, right? And when you install an access point outdoors, you got to think of a few things. First off, is this access point going to be near where the users are. You know, you have to almost think about this like a light bulb. You know, if you were trying to cover an area, you know, you can't go way high on top of a building and put this access point up there and expect to be on the ground and have great coverage, because the issue there is that, you know, when you go really, really high, you're up in the air. Now there's a height disparity between the access point and where the user is. So most of that signal will go over the user's head. You know, you can have a high gain Omni on a ceiling of a building, you know, I mean, on the roof of a building, be out in the parking lot, look up and see it and still have trouble getting into it, right? So you know, the first thing you got to think about is can I mount this AP as outside and as close to the actual users as I can? You know, if you got a bus garage or something like that, you know, you don't want that thing way up in here. You want down where close to where the buses are or the people are, right? So that brings it that challenge with it. So there are ways to artfully disguise the AP. There's a lot of third-party vendors out there, you know, your TerraWaves and Ventevs and people like that that can give you, you know, decorative things that make the AP match the concrete wall of your building or where, whatever it's in the environment you're in, right? So the first challenge is, if I have to go high and I'm way up, you know, significantly higher than the user, then I probably don't want an Omni antenna. I want a directional antenna. And the 9163E has two antennas available to it right now. The initial release, and they got these part numbers, error, or ANT, CW, blah, 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 you know, and it breaks down pretty easy. I mean, you know, ANT means antenna, CW is Cisco wireless. That means it encompasses Meraki and Cisco. ANT means antenna. In the case of the 9163E, 01 is the omnidirectional antenna. That's the one that screws on the top and kind of looks, people think it looks like a little piece of pipe or a pipe bomb kind of thing. It's just a white antenna, gray antenna, screws on the top of it. And then the last part number is N for N connector, S for self-identifying. But the same part number, and that's the Omni, and you need however many Omnis you're going to use, right? I mean, that part number isn't a kit of 4 or 5 or whatever. It's an Omni, so you have to order however many of them you're going to use. And if you are looking for a directional antenna, there is one coming for the 9163E. We haven't announced it yet, but it's the same exact part number, except instead of that ANT-01, it's now an ANT-D1, much like the D1 you find in the 9166. D means directional, right? And that's basically, you know, the antennas, the omnidirectional antennas are basically 4 dBi and 2.4 gig and 8 dBi and 5 and 6 gig. The patch antennas basically are, you know, two patch antennas that do 2, 4, and 5 gig and another set that does 6, 5, and 6 gig, right? So that's how those antennas. So if you have a directional antenna, you can mount that on a high building and tilt it down to cover where the users are if you can't get the AP physically as close to the users as you can, right? But that's, you know, the idea with these antennas on the AP is that when you have an antenna and it is mounted on the AP, I'm not that concerned about lightning on the antenna. If you have the antenna and you have a long cable, say you put an extension cable on the access point, you're moving that antenna out. Maybe you've made a business decision to mount the AP indoors and you're just going to put only the antennas outside. If you do something like that, then you definitely need lightning protection on the antennas, because, you know, what happens with lightning is, you know, wind blows against anything, be it a metal object, an AP, you know, a cable assembly, and it builds up static, and that static can cause a streamer, basically a static event that attracts lightning to then come down and hit it, right? So I'm concerned about a couple things when I mount an AP outside. I'm concerned about any cables entering the building. If you've got power or Ethernet running into the building, you want to use a power or Ethernet lightning arrestor before it enters the building and you want to ground it. The device itself is metal, and if it's on a metal pole, for example, you want to ground that pole to something. And if you're on top of a building, you know, a lot of buildings have their own lightning systems. As you're on top of the building, you see these little lightning spikes all around the building, that ground system there. You could tie to that ground system, or if it's an electrical, you know, maybe you've got 110 or 220 volts or something that you're using out there, then that voltage outside, that electrical outside, should have some sort of suppression and you know, a breaker, that kind of thing on it, you know. But that's the main thing, is that any cables entering the building, you want to have this lightning protection, mainly because you don't want a lightning strike and that stuff entering the building. You don't want it to hit your IT equipment. You don't want it to cause a fire. Insurance regulations, fire regulations sometimes require these suppressors. So that's the one issue. The other issue that I got is, anytime you put something outdoors, it's going to degrade in the elements somewhat, right? I mean, if you've got an access point and you've mounted it at a, say a MARSC outdoor area where there are all these MARSC containers and everything, and you're right on the ocean, you know, you've got this salt water coming in and things, and you know, that's not gonna do the AP any good, right? So anytime you're outdoors, it's a good idea to weatherproof things, right? So if you've got a cable, if you've got an antenna connector, say an end connector that, maybe doesn't have a cap on it or anything, you're not using an antenna on the particular thing, there's a weatherproof cap that we offer. I think it's called AIR for probably original AeroNet, AIR, and then ACC for accessory, and then 15N dash cap, right? Equal sign means it's a portable part.
Fred, component. Fred, I'll be honest on something. I was telling the folks over the chat that talking to you about wireless is like drinking straight from the water hose. Dude, it's a lot. Again, not in a bad way. It is really this plethora of information that comes right at you, and you feel completely drawn by the current. I know Cheto has been holding for a bit, asking something, and you can see the guy is just building up the pressure.
It's so interesting listening to Fred. So if he could talk for like 15 hours straight, I would just listen. It's so interesting. So with so many topics that you cover, right? We have lightning arresters, you have waterproofing, and like you briefly mentioned the antennas, like patch antennas. I'm guessing there are specific rules on what kind of elevation you have the antennas, azimuth, like the degrees of antenna. Is it like a 110 by 55, 60 by 60? What type of antenna are allowed?
We have done our best when we try to deploy these products with antennas that will comply with the least amount of the user having to be an RF geek to put it in, kind of thing, right? So there's something called SIA. You'll see this term, SIA. And by the way, some of our deployment guides are a little dated, so I'm kicking out, I haven't released it yet, but it's just about done, an RF reference guide. And this RF reference guide will detail, what is SIA? What is this? What do you have to know about deploying these antennas outdoors with angles and things like that? But the takeaway is, SIA stands for self-identifying antenna. And what that will do is, and there's color schemes on these antennas. If you take the, the antennas on basically the 9163E, you know, we've got like, you know, 6 gigahertz is kind of yellow in color if it's CIA, if it's a SIA antenna, clear if it's a non-SIA, 5 gigs orange, 2, 4, and 5 gig are purple. You know, so we've done these colors, but to get back to the SIA self-identifying antenna, there's one port on the AP that's SIA capable that tells that AP, what did you just screw into me, right? And that keeps it, that basically says, I now know what it is. I can adjust my power. I can adjust things to be compliant in that. And that really happened, to give you a little history on that, a long time ago. Early APs had higher power on internal integrated antennas. And the minute that you had one that was an E version that you could screw a dipole on, what happened was you end up putting a dipole 2.2 dBi antenna on the top of an AP that really had to scale its power for 6 dBi. It had to assume that you were running a 6 dBi antenna. So the product was lower power, and it actually kind of took a bump in performance because the antenna couldn't be identified, right? So we created SIA for those dipoles to get the AP up higher power, and work better. And then it just dovetailed into the new 6 gig to be able to make sure that you're not putting a 14 dBi or 20 dBi 6 gig antenna on there and running it and getting out of compliance, because the whole idea with SIA is to just kind of make it so that things just work without a lot of interaction.
But then you point the antenna also, like up in the air, because you don't know the orientation of it, right?
Yeah. I think also another thing with SIA is that FCC has always required that antennas be tested with APs, right? And that's easy if you have integrated antennas. But with external antennas, it's a little harder to control. In the past, it's been kind of like a loophole, right? You could pretty much attach any antenna you want to the APs, as long as you set the gain correctly on the APs. But recently, FCC has really tightened down the rules. So instead of self-declaring the gains on your antenna, we need to provide antenna pattern, antenna information to the FCC for certification. And I think that's where SIA comes in, just because now we can ensure that the antenna that you put on the APs are actually compliant, right? So with the 9163, if it doesn't recognize the antenna that you attach to it, it actually won't bring up the radio, right? So this is our way of complying with the FCC regulations.
So can you then only use Cisco antenna, since the Cisco is the only one that you see, or any other, and for example, antenna that should be compliant?
Right. So I think we're trying to see how we could enable SIA for the antennas, but the main factor is that the antenna must be tested with FCC, right? Okay. So the antenna needs to be in our AP FCC report in order for it to work with AP.
Yeah, the way it was done in past prior to 6 gig, it was like if the antenna that you were using was of the same gain and of the same design that we had certified, you could use it as kind of like a replacement part, right? So a lot of third party companies made antennas that were very similar to ours. And, there was reasons to go with them, price point differences, or maybe the mounting that they had was different and suited somebody better, that kind of thing. And we haven't, this is not an effort to lock others out of the antenna business. It's a matter of, as Dan said, complying with the FCC rules. And, we have a lot of, Cisco developer networks, DevNet, other things, there's a lot of things that might happen down the road that'll open that up a bit. But initially, 6 gig, as Dan said, it's new. The FCC doesn't need any infractions or bad things starting to happen that will come and bite us.
Makes sense.
So, hey, Fred, you mentioned something a few minutes ago that I kind of wanted to circle back on was you said Meraki. So is the 9163 capable of being managed and monitored within Meraki dashboard?
Absolutely. We've done a lot of changes in hardware. It's funny, when Cisco first acquired Meraki, it was like, hey, are you guys Aeronet? You guys make all these great APs. You're going to make them APs for Meraki, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And, it's taken a long time, but Cisco engineers and Meraki engineers, we've gotten together, we've made sure that we've got this common hardware platform, and it doesn't really, in my opinion, make sense to make too many APs that don't work in both environments, right? Cisco is like a shopping mall with every store in the mall being a business unit, right? You've got your IW, business unit, your industrial wireless, and you got, certain APs like the IW9167E, which is, built, for, a higher IP rating, built for more of an industrial application, a coal mine, that kind of thing, places, that maybe the 9163 might not scale, but there's just different products across the board. And in my opinion, the original, Aeronet Airspace, team and the original Meraki team, it's all blended now in with great synergy. Everything is being tested together to make sure you don't, have a us versus them or a, gee, I don't know which one to buy now kind of thing. There's still some products that aren't dedicated in both areas, but for the most part, everything's coming together.
Yeah, that's cool. So if you have like a lot of APs that you that you installed, you don't want to go out and like replace them. You just want to move over to cloud, just press a button almost, and then convert your entire outdoor installation to Meraki.
Correct. That's, you can easily convert to Meraki, and you can easily take a Meraki product and convert it back to a Cisco EN. And it's nice to be able to go either way, because, you know, our badges back in, I don't know, 2005 or so, the Cisco badge that everybody wears, you know, right on the back of it always said, no technology religion, you know, and that's kind of what we want to do. We don't, you know, we want the customers to use the best products that solve the problems in their environment. And there's, you know, there's reasons. So, you know, you can make an argument, well, you want to do it this way or you want to do it that way. I think it's just a matter of looking at the products and, you know, does it suit your need and, you know, will it work for you? And do you have a place to grow? I mean, it's important to have a place to grow. In other words, you don't want to be handcuffed into any particular thing. You know, when you look at like the 9166 D1 that I talked about, I mentioned that one was a low power AP, covered the entire spectrum. And, you know, depending upon what country you're in, obviously, and the U.S. covers the entire spectrum. But, you know, when you look at that product with its integrated antenna option, nobody has anything that's like that, that allows you to just focus that energy as if you had external antennas. And there's a warehouse, L'Oreal did a warehouse recently. It's about a 1 million square foot warehouse. They're saying that thing's like 4 football fields in length, right? I mean, you can Google, if you just go to Google and you Google 6 gigahertz warehouse or 6 gig warehouse YouTube, it'll come up. But they basically used Ekahau tools and the 9166 D1, and they laid out that 1 million square foot warehouse with 5 gig and 6 gig, right? And you know, the question is, well, why did they do that? You know, do you need 6 gig in a warehouse? And the answer to that is, if you're going to do 1 million square foot warehouse, you want to do it once, right? You don't want to do it and then go, oh, I wish we'd have done 6 gig at the time. So this thing is just, you know, an awesome thing. Like I said, there's a YouTube video on it. It's kind of fun because they show testing the AP on a stick. They show all the heat patterns that 9166 D1 did. Just kind of a cool video. So just want to mention it. But the takeaway is, whether you're doing an outdoor deployment and you want 6 gig, or whether you're doing an indoor deployment, you can use standard power in either one. If you take a product like the 9166 D1 and you decide, I want to run that at standard power, right? You know, there are methods in place that we're getting in that will bring that thing up in power, but then it will then require AFC, right? So that requires access points in the near field to have either a small GPS module, right? Because it doesn't make sense to take an indoor access point, in my opinion, an indoor access point that's designed to run low power and then build a GPS in every one of those things, when GPS doesn't work very well indoors unless you are on the outside of the building. You know, if you're have an access point that's got a view to the window, then you know you can get a GPS signal and you can coordinate with the automatic frequency coordination and you can do that whole thing. But there has to be some APs on that perimeter that have GPS abilities to be able to run that standard power. And that's, you know, that's with some customers, that's a big deal. They want to be able to do that. You know, they want that higher power. Other people, it's like, no, I don't need the noise of all of that. I just want to deploy the AP anywhere I want in this warehouse and just have it work. And I don't want a AFC coordinate or whatever. In that case, the combination of the 9166i and the 9166 D1 gives you that directional and omnidirectional to be able to pepper them anywhere you want and deploy any way you want to deploy.
Oh God, we'll need another 3 episodes only to listen to all these stories from Fred. It's almost mesmerizing, isn't it?
I feel like people are going to be tuning in just to hear Fred talk.
Well, thank you.
So that was a very good conversation. Is there anything else from our champions that you want to know? Dan, is there anything that you wanted to add? Fred, any final thoughts?
I want to have like the fine time measurements of the access point outdoors so that I auto placed every single access point I installed outdoors. Just done with it because I don't trust every engineer that installed my access points. So I want that to work outside.
Well, Well, the outdoor APs have GPS, so you figure out where they're at, you know, but it's still a matter of common sense, right? I mean, and what I mean by common sense is, you know, if you don't know anything about radio, you don't know anything about RF, and you walk in that area and you see the access point is mounted right in front of a big metal I-beam, you know, you're going to know just looking at it, that radio signal has got to contend with that thing in the front of it that's now making it directional, right? Or, you know, if the antenna is mounted to where the cables are higher than the antenna. Well, you know, it doesn't take a genius to know rainwater is going to hit those cables and it's going to run down the cable. And since it's higher than the antenna, it's going to want to run into the antenna, right? And over time, you'll get water intrusion and things if you don't weatherproof. And that's why I kept talking about antenna connectors and weatherproofing and things like that, because it's even as stupid as if you have a cable that is going up in the air and the cable goes up and you're going to tape it to a connector, you want to start the tape at the bottom and roll it up. That way every fold of the tape is over another one so that the tape is rolling over and not trying to get into the tape and, you know, corrode the thing, right? So, you know, there's grease that, you know, we give you this dielectric grease, I believe it's called Burndy Penetrox A, and that grease is a conductive grease that will help weatherproof those connectors and things. There's also a product called SuperLube. SuperLube is a product that you can buy at, like, in America here at your local Ace Hardware store, but it's a form of Teflon grease, and it will, you know, you want to grease anything that screws. If you're using an antenna outside, most of our hardware is all stainless steel because we don't want that corroding and seizing. And, you know, if you put something together, keep with the idea that I might want to take it back apart, right? You know, a lot of times people put this up and they don't care, right? And then they just end up with this blob of crap that they can't take apart, they can't fix, they can't service. You know, it's silly, but, like, you know, I'm a ham radio operator in NHCPI, and you know, there's a little company here in Akron called DX Engineering. Same people that created, one of those high performance sports car companies. Can't think of it now. But anyway, DX Engineering, if you were to Google DX Engineering space weatherproof, hell, they got documents on how to properly weatherproof. They've got materials that we don't have that they offer. You know, I'm not trying to plug them, but what I'm saying is there's a lot of things, you know, Google's your friend, YouTube's your friend, you know, but there's a lot of stuff out there that you just want to look at it from a common sense perspective. If I put this together, is it weatherproofed enough I can take it apart again? That's all I'm saying, because, you know, you don't want to be the installer that put that up and left a mess for somebody else. That's kind of my opinion.
Well, Daniel, I think we will need another Cisco Champion episode only to talk about how to grease your anything that's screws.
Yeah.
Oh God, I love it. I was holding it for a while. So,
well. I agree. Well, to our listeners, if you want to continue your learning on today's topic, you can check out the resources provided in the show notes below. And this is your weekly reminder. You can subscribe to Cisco Champion Radio on your favorite streaming platform and receive alerts on our latest releases. So wherever you're listening to us, make sure to click on that subscribe or follow button now. Thank you for listening in. See you again next time.